Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it must be 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturday, December 4th, 2010, because here we all are. And I'd like to personally thank everyone for tuning in to another hour of A Touch of Grace, the show that puts the spotlight on interesting and inspiring authors. I'm author G.D. Grace, producer and humble host of the show, and I am broadcasting live from Palo Alto, California, here in the exciting San Francisco Bay Area. I am thoroughly jazzed about having this remarkable young lady on A Touch of Grace. She is the author of the heartwarming book, The House with Dirt Walls, and is also quite the humanitarian. Her name is Elaine Newkirk. Hey, Elaine, how you doing?
I'm blessed. How are you?
You know what? I'm doing very well, and I just want to say welcome to A Touch of Grace, and I'm honored to have you as a guest, and I'm going to get things started with one of my original quotes, and it's called The Top, and here it goes. The collective efforts of motivated individuals transcends and propels possibilities into opportunities where doors are widely opened, for nothing yields success better than progressive effort. At the beginning, that tall hill looks impossible to climb, and even towards the middle, you wonder how. But then, finally, you reach the top. So that's what I had to say about that. And before we continue, I really feel like I'm on top of the world right now because God allowed our paths to cross in this lifetime, Elaine. Okay, so I want to fill the listeners in just a little bit about you, and I'm just going to read the first paragraph of what I wrote on my blog site about you to give them a little bit of preliminary info about you. So this, so here's how it goes. So just sit back for a sec, okay?
Okay.
A humanitarian is a selfless individual with warming arms that hold those in need of hope tightly. Their hearts are touched by God's very grace, and in the center of their smile, all that is divine can be seen. This description of an angel best defines an incredible writer who goes by the name of Elaine Newkirk. She authored the heartwarming book, The House with Dirt Walls. And within her inspiring list of accomplishments, she is also parent extraordinaire. With a biological child, she has also opened up her home to four pre-adoptive children with disabilities. Over the past 10 years, she has fostered 60 others in a quest to make lives better for youth in need. Without a doubt, she is extraordinary. In addition to her novel, she has also written four screenplays, two feature-length and two television sitcoms. Her list of accomplishments also include ordained minister through the World Council of Independent Christian Churches and a guest appearance on the internationally acclaimed The Dr. Phil Show. Okay, so that's you, and I suppose the best place it is.
It sounds unbelievable.
Well, you know what? It's all you. This is your life we're talking about here today. And So my first question of the evening, Elaine, is where did your remarkable journey begin?
I think it all began probably when I was about, 23, 24 years old. I have a younger sister who is 9 years younger than me. And my mom, at the time we were living in New York, and my mom was relocating from Staten Island to the Bronx, and she had just started the high school where she was, and she wanted to stay there. She didn't want to move. My mom was remarrying, you know, that whole story. And so she asked if she could come and live with me, so that she could stay in the high school that she was in, and my mom agreed with that, and I agreed with that. And upon her coming to stay with me, she brought two of her friends with her who were having problems at home. And I ended up having three teenagers in my house. And in order to keep those two girls in the home with me, I had to become a foster parent. So I became a foster parent so that they could stay with me. And then it just kind of spiraled out of control from there.
So would you say that it is some, do you, because I'm a believer that nothing happens by chance.
Mm-hmm.
And this certainly must be the case with you, because it almost seemed to open the floodgate of your heart and your home.
Mm-hmm.
to these children. And we're going to, children, these children. So what we're going to do, we're going to get into a little bit of that. I try to keep everything composed because I don't want to miss anything.
Right.
And I don't want the listeners to miss anything about you. So at what age did you discover that you had the gift of literary expression?
I've always written. I think my most memorable experience is when I was in the fifth grade, and my English teacher, Mrs. DeLuca, I'll never forget it, she had given us, we had to do a book report. And it had to be on a book that meant something to our lives, that changed our lives. And I read all these books, and I couldn't find anything that I really wanted to write about, so I made up my own story. And and I got up, and I did the oral book report, and I made up the story, I made up the author, I made up everything. And at the end of the class, the teacher said, I have to read that book because it sounds so fantastic. And
how old were you again?
This was fifth grade, so I guess I was, what, 11 or 12 or 10, 11. And I was, like, on pins and needles for, like, the next week because I knew she was not going to be able to find this book. And sure enough, she came up to me and she said, that book does not exist. And I told her I made it up. And I had gotten an A-plus on the report. And she said, you know what, I can't give you an A-plus because it's not a real book, but I'm going to give you a B. And I want you to write this full story for me, and you're going to read it to the class. And that's what I did, and that's kind of how I got out there.
Okay, well, what was that little story about? Do you remember? Cause it sounds
I don't
like
even
that
remember
your...
what it was about. No, I don't.
Well, I would say that the creative bug bit you, you know, at a very early age. So the next question I have for you is, do you recall that defining moment, and this might have answered the question, when a reader provided you with feedback that assured you that you were meant to be a writer?
I think it's actually with this book, The House with Dirt Walls, because... It sounds strange to say, but I didn't write this book to sell it. I wrote this book because of the youth that I currently work with. A lot of them have been sexually abused and physically abused and are going through some issues. And it's very hard to get young people to open up. So what I did was I wrote the story and I kind of introduced it to them as we're doing a book report, and we're discussing the story in the book. And as we begin to discuss the stories in the book, of course, it related to what the girls were going through. And that's how I knew that this is what I was supposed to do, and it just... It's hard to explain, but it just...
No, you're doing fine. So
they not only did they relate to it, but the feedback that I get from those who have purchased the book and, you know, people... telling me this story, and just to briefly talk about the book talks about four young girls who have all been sexually abused, and it talks about their different experiences. And one of the most poignant points in the book, I think, is that one of the girls liked what was happening to her. Even though it was a negative thing, it was a bad thing, she didn't quite understand that that's what it was, and she liked that what was not so much what was happening to her, but the feelings that she was getting from what was happening. And that's, I think I got more emails on that than anything else, because so many people who have gone through sexual abuse feel that guilt, and they said they've never seen it anywhere where anyone has ever talked about that part of it. So that's the, you know, that's why I said, okay, this book was meant to be written.
Well, I want to share something with you, and I'm pretty sure that you might have read some of these are some of the customer reviews that are on Amazon. One person wrote, this is such an important book for mothers. It is about daughters. It's about daughters, but sons could be facing the same situation.
Right.
Do not get that confused. Another writer wrote, the worst sin ever. Charlie and her three sisters from day one of their lives faced such pain and torture at the very hands of those who should have loved and cared for them. And then the last one is The Dirty Secrets. Charlie and her sisters grew up in Brooklyn, New York, with her mother. Charlie had three other sisters, Sherry, Talia, and Taisha. Now, and the reason I wanted to read those comments from people, because it's going to lead into to my next question.
Mm-hmm.
How does that make you feel, knowing that you have had such a profound effect on people that are reading the words of your novel?
I feel blessed, actually. I feel blessed that I was in a position for God to use me to make a difference in someone else's life.
Okay. Okay, and so do you think that that is what inspires you to write? Because now the House with Dirt Walls, that is your first novel. But,
yes.
But again, you've wrote a couple of things. Are
right.
you going to write another novel eventually?
I am. Actually, The House with Dirt Walls is the first of a series. Each one of the girls' stories is going to be told from their eyes, as well as it's going to introduce other characters and different things like that. And the book itself, one of the screenplays that I wrote is based on the book, and I'm actually shopping it to some different TV networks and stuff like that to kind of make it a series to talk about these issues.
Okay, so just digging a little bit deeper, can you share with us, because some of the reviews, the writer or reader's comments on Amazon kind of, you know, led in a little bit about the book, but can you share with us about what the novel is about, per se?
It is about sexual abuse, of course. The mother of Charlene, which is the main character in this series. She's an alcoholic. She marries a man that she's only known for a couple of weeks and brings him into her home where she has four daughters. And he begins to molest the girls. And without giving away, you know, too much what's in the book, you know, it's hinted that she knows what's happening. But the girls each deal with it in their own different ways. Charlene, of course, like I said, the story is about her. So she really, like, gets turned off from men, is turned off from life, and then she chooses a gentleman that abuses her as her love partner, and she has difficulties with late relationships and so forth until, you know, the end of the book when she finds God, actually. And that's what makes the difference in her life, is her finding God and him letting her know that she is worthy of love, and she has a purpose in this world. And once she finds God, then she's able to open up her heart to let someone else love her and find some happiness in her life.
Oh, God, you got me tearing up over here. She finds God. Another interesting point that you made a little earlier is that there was a child that I guess started liking, I guess, what was happening,
mm-hmm.
or I guess the action that was happening
right.
to her. And I guess, is that just a part of wanting to be loved? And that's where she... Mm-hmm.
Well, the way that it's written in the book, and actually her story is actually the next one that's coming out, and the way that she explains what happens in the story is that she realized that she was getting pleasure from it, you know, because even if you're getting sexually abused, sometimes the body reacts in a way that you don't expect for it to react. You know, if your body is being stimulated, sometimes you just can't control those things. So she realized that not only was she getting pleasure from what was happening to her, but her partner or the person that was abusing her was also getting pleasure from it, and she realized that that was a tool that she could use to get what she wanted. So it wasn't necessarily that she liked what was happening, but she began to play a power trip on the perpetrator in a sense of turning the tables on him.
Wow, so as a point to get, yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's twisted, but I
yeah.
get where you're coming from
yeah.
because she realized the power.
Right.
Because once, I guess that's with all of us, that one, and depending on how we choose to use that power, do we use it for good or
mm-hmm.
do we use it to be vindictive,
right.
to get, you know, to retaliate against the person that actually harmed us, or
mm-hmm.
to further our financial game,
right.
Because I know that certainly people can channel that into, okay, it's already happened to me, so
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm just going to go ahead and use what I got, my moneymaker.
Right. And then in the mind of a child, you know, they don't understand what's going on. They can't process the seriousness of the situation. You know, all they're thinking of is, you know, what's happening to me and how can I get out of this situation.
So then I'm pretty sure that there is, especially since you deal with so many kids, I bet you there is a boatload of emotions that are attached there. And because they are so young, much of their thought processes have not matured.
Right.
So do you find yourself, especially when you're dealing with the children, having to kind of, you know, put them back on the right track and change their thought process about what happened to them to make them more productive citizens?
As far as changing their thought process, as far as being a victim or?
Yeah, changing their thought processes that, okay, this did happen to you,
mm-hmm.
but you could also, you could be better than that. You could rise up from that. You are not the product of what happened to you. Do you find, are there children that you have actually had to, you know, kind of sit down and kind of talk to them and question them about what they were feeling to kind of maybe correct some of the warped thoughts that might be going through their head to help them figure it out?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. With any person, whether it's a child or an adult that you're dealing with that is just coming to terms with being sexually abused, that's the issue, period, is trying to first make them realize that it was not their fault. It was a crime. It was something that was perpetrated on them and that it was not their fault. And that's usually the hardest barrier that with anyone that I've dealt with is trying to get over. And then, of course, it is what you're saying is that not letting that define who you are and rising above that.
Yeah, because sometimes it can really corrupt a person, a good person,
mm-hmm.
that was the victim of sexual assault, and then it changes them and alters their lives forever. There was a young man that I had on the first couple of shows who wrote a book called Broken Gem. His name was Tassan Haynes, and within
uh-huh.
that book, a young girl was raped. Her mother was on drugs, and she
mm-hmm.
pretty much was going to sell her daughter out to a couple of people that came to sell her these drugs, and the young girl heard that her mother was pretty much trading her off,
uh-huh.
and she tries to escape, and then the men actually did catch her, and they did rape her, and they left her for dead. Her mother left, and then it changed her life to where she realized the power that her beauty and her body had, and so she chose to use that to get what she want, but it
mm-hmm.
was very wicked the way she did.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you about what made you give your book the title The House with Dirt Walls?
Now, this is going to sound like a weird and crazy story, but if you knew me, you would know. It was originally called something else. It was originally called, I believe, The Lies That She Told was the original title. And I had a dream that
okay.
I was on Oprah, and she told me that that's not a good title for the book.
Okay.
And I said, well, what should I call it? And she said, The House with Dirt Walls. And I said, well, why should I call it that? And to make a long story short, it was pretty much that so many people are living in these beautiful homes that look like mansions and are immaculate. And when you look at the outside of the house, even when you look at the family, the people in the house, it looks like the perfect family. But then there's this dirty secret of sexual abuse within that home. And they're living in a clean house with dirty walls. And that's where it came from. Yeah,
it makes perfect
yeah.
sense. You know, as a writer myself, you know, the titles that we give our books as writers or our poems as writers, they really do have a significant
mm-hmm.
meaning. You know, so
mm-hmm.
I guess the question that I have, because you I was a manager at a company, and, you know, dealing with a lot of people's personality issues or a lot of their pain, and then you're dealing with your own issues as well, because you're an individual too, and you have your own good and your own bad days, and sometimes you even have your own emotional things from the past that you had to deal with. So where do you find the time to let me go into this a little bit. At the beginning of the show, and on the promo piece, I called you a humanitarian because of your extraordinary work with the foster kids. So you have fostered about 60 children. So how do you find time for yourself?
It's very difficult. I mean, I make time for myself. I have been blessed to have a wonderful support system. My sister, friends, family members, and things like that, that when I do say I need a break, you know, one of them will step in and take over. And I think that that has been my saving grace, is that I do have that fantastic support group. And my children, thank God, are all older now. They're in their teens. So it's not as hard now as it was back then. So now I'm able to, I can just, you know, they're old enough, they can stay in the house by themselves or whatever now, and I can just go out and go for a walk or go out on to eat or whatever it is that I need to do.
Now, wait a minute. You just said so that you can go out to eat. That's when you get your alone time, right?
Sometimes.
Oh, sometimes.
If I'm alone when I'm eating.
Well, do you understand that your acts of selflessness and kindness, they're pretty divine in nature, so I'm trying to grasp on to how you manage to even have the time to write, because I'm a single person. I'm working part-time. I'm writing a couple of books simultaneously. So I'm still trying to put myself in your shoes to see what your daily routines are like, because I know some of the kids have disabilities. Is that correct?
Right, right. They do. Most of my writing I do while my kids are in school. That little 6 hours makes a big difference. And then I'm a night owl, so I'm up at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning doing things, writing or, you know, preparing speeches if I have to go somewhere and speak and things like that. So.
So you do get out in front of the public. See, that's, again, see how it's branching off? So you're caring for the children. You have your own needs that you have to take care of, and then your own business matters that you have to take care of. You are definitely writing, a writing maniac, as far as I'm concerned, with the screenplays you've written. And then you've been on an international show, and now tack on speaking engagements.
Well, I've always done speaking engagements from the beginning. When my kids were younger, they were homeschooled. So when I went out on speaking engagements and things like that, they traveled with me. And before I got up and spoke, they would get up and sing or get up and do a dance or whatever it was that, whatever venue it was that we were going to. And I mainly did that because it was about them. And I can get up and I can talk about foster care and adoption and who these kids are up the wazoo, but when you put a face on the kids, it makes a difference. So I made my children the face of whatever it was that I was speaking about, and that was the greatest impact that those that I spoke to ever received, because they were never shown the actual children. You know, when I would get my daughters up there and say, you know, and these kids were sexually abused and they were physically abused, and I would show pictures of how they were when they first came to me and what they look like now. And when you look at that previous picture, that first picture, you can't see the beauty in them because their eyes are swollen or bleeding, the lips are busted and things like that. But then when you see these beautiful kids standing before you, who wouldn't want to become a foster parent after that?
Wow. And, you know, it takes a lot of courage to do what you do. And I guess what I want to know, again, you know, in dealing with people and managing people, you know, I could always leave that at work and come home to my own world. But you're there with people, and you're dealing with human behaviors. So has there ever been a time where maybe you've had a child or two that you were trying to reach and you just couldn't reach them? Has that ever come up?
Yes, I have had out of this. Well, it's more than 60 now. But out of the 60 something kids that I've had to ask two of them to be removed, and that is the hardest. That well, for me, it was the hardest thing for me to do because I have this save the world mentality, and to not be able to help those kids, it was hard. But the first one was a young lady who was 16 years old, and she was involved in gangs. And the gang members started coming around the house. And, you know, and at the time, I had my three little boys and my sister living with me. And I couldn't put them in harm's way to try to reach this child. So I had to ask for her to be removed. And then the second young lady was a 12-year-old who... mother had been teaching her to boost and steal clothes from the time that she was in the stroller. And she had came to my home, and she was stealing everything out the wazoo. And my sister asked me, can she put a lock on her door? And what that told me was that I was taking her security away from her, and I couldn't do that. So I had to ask for that child to be removed. And the other kids, we dealt with. We worked with them. In fact, people call me crazy, but my two boys that I adopted, their biological mom is sitting right here listening to me talk to you right now.
Unbelievable. So you fostered a relationship with her. So I have. So the question that I have, no, you're not crazy. If anything, you are very, very selfless and very courageous, because it's very easy to turn your back on people that are in trouble. You know, it's very, that's the easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. But you choose to stare the demon of hopelessness in the eye. And so my question to you is the booster, the person that was involved in gangs that even put you in harm's way, with all of those possibilities out there, what compels you to devote so much of your time to caring for children? Where do you think it comes from?
From God. I just think I think it comes from God, and then a long family line of doing it, because my mother, we always had somebody in our house. She was always taking in somebody to help, and my grandmother was the same way, and I think it was just something that was instilled in me from birth. And my mother even, she had a video of me when I was 7 years old saying that I wasn't going to get married and I wasn't going to have kids because I was going to adopt 12 kids and live in this big house. So it must have been, you know, something in the upbringing. And, you know, I believe that when God creates us, that he has already created everything that he has the desire for us to do. And that desire, if you look at children, even in their play, when they're playing with their dolls or cars or whatever it is, that you can see that in them. And it's just, I guess it's just always been there.
Wow. Well, what I want to do right now, if it's okay with you, I know that, first of all, I wanted to give a shout out to our friends over at the Steamy Writers page on Facebook. And I want to take a call or two. Do you mind?
Nope, go right ahead.
Okay, here we go. All right, so here we go. Let's see, 510-860, you're on. Do you have a question for this incredible woman?
Actually, I do. Hi, JD. You know, I really appreciate your show. You do an excellent job. I just want to thank you. Hello, Elaine. My name is Mike Giddens. How are you?
Hey, Mike.
Hi. You know, when I read your bio, first of all, I was very impressed. I think you're an amazing individual. But, you know, I got tired just reading your bio, and I'm amazed that you've done so many things and accomplished so many things. So, I mean, you're a minister, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
You write books. You take care of all these beautiful kids. What I like to know is, give me an example. What is a typical day? And JD kind of touched on it too. What is a typical day like for you? I mean, what do you do from the time you wake up until the time you go to sleep?
Whether you want a weekday or a weekend.
You pick it.
I'll do the weekend.
No, a weekday.
A weekday. Okay, now you had to go with the hard one. Okay. The weekday is filled with me. I get up, of course. I get the kids up for school. Make sure they all get out and get off on the bus. Then I'll come in and I'll sit down to my computer, and I'm addicted to the Steamy Trails place on Facebook now. This girl, Katrina, got me all addicted on and hooked up on that, so I have to go there first thing in the morning and see what's up with you guys. And after I do that, actually I get a lot of my inspiration to write from there. I have actually 3 blogs that I'm writing right now. And I get a lot of my inspiration from there, and then I'll go on and I'll sign into my blogs and I'll write my blogs. And after I do my blogs, it depends on what day of the week. Certain days of the week I go out to a woman's shelter out here, and I'm helping some of the women there to reach certain goals that they're reaching out for. So if it's one that's trying to get into college, I'll drive her around to different colleges and whatever we do there. A lot of my day is spent out doing that. And then when I come back, the kids are about to come home from school. My youngest son has autism, so he has therapy and different therapy appointments and things that we do in the evening. Then it's dinner and off to bed, and then that's when I write, when the kids go to bed. If I'm not.
You know, then that's amazing, too, because my day only has 24 hours. I don't know where you get the 36-hour day from. But, you know, you're doing God's work, and, you know, and it's been nice knowing you. You know, you're a beautiful person. And just keep it up, you know, because like I told you, like I mentioned earlier, you know, there's a special place in heaven for you. So just keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael, for joining us, okay?
All righty.
All right, buddy. You take care. We'll talk soon. Oh, wow. God, I just got a little tear in my eye. There's a place in heaven for you. Okay, let's take another call here. Hold on a sec. Okay, 209-244, you are on with Arthur G.D. Grace and Elaine Newkirk. What do you have a question for? Hello? Okay, they probably just want to listen. Okay, here, let's go to 323. Okay, 323-717, you're on. Do you have a question?
Hi, G.D. This is Tracy.
Hi.
Hi.
No, I actually don't have a question. I was listening to what Mike said, and he pretty much asked what I was interested in. But I do just want to say that both you guys are just doing awesome things. GD, we appreciate you. And Elaine, it is sure enough a pleasure and a blessing to know you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tracy, for the support, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I said thank you so much for your support.
Uh-huh.
All right, we'll be in touch, okay? Listen to that. Isn't that wonderful? Here,
yes,
the chat room has kind of been blowing up here. I want you to hear what people are saying about you. Somebody said you're absolutely amazing. As somebody dittoed that, they said she really is. I just told a family member that I'm so glad she and I have crossed paths. Let's see. Okay, well, people are just kind of going back and forth, but they're really enjoying the show. And the bottom line is that they believe that you are a great person, and I certainly do. But tack on to what Tracy and what Michael said, you are just a wonderful person. So let's go ahead and continue on with the interview. I would like to ask you this question. What would you say has been the most rewarding part of what you do for these children?
I think the most rewarding part is when I have a young lady, for instance, like I said, my children's biological mom is here, and even though she's still going through some things, when I have a foster child or a youth that's come through my program and I see them at that moment and I don't really know that my work is going to make a difference in them, and 5, 10 years later, I see them, and they're doing so well, and they tell me it's because of me. And I think that that's the most rewarding thing that I could ever achieve. That's the best reward ever, you know, to know that, you know, because a lot of times when we're working and we're doing things for people and, you know, we're trying to make a difference in their lives, we don't know what the future holds. So we don't know that what we're doing is actually going to make a difference. But when you see what your work has done, it's the best thing ever.
God, the goosebumps are just going all over Mario. I'm surprised you can't hear them honking right now because I'm teary-eyed, and I guess the part that's hitting me the most is that when you're out here in the world, you know, there's so much on television and so much out there that would have you believe that things like this aren't occurring when in fact we know very much that there are people out there like you and even like myself that are trying to make a difference out here with what we have. Now, your kind deeds caught the attention of an international show, Dr. Phil, who is pretty close to Oprah. So what I want to know, what was that experience like for you? Kind of take us through how you were contacted, and then you got on a plane and you flew there. Take us through that whole experience, if you don't mind.
Well, before Dr. Phil, I did Essence magazine. And they chose me as one of their 35th anniversary issue, they chose me as one of their 35 most remarkable women in the world. And from doing the Essence magazine shoot, I guess someone saw me in there, and I got, like, literally thousands of emails, and I personally take the time to, I mean, not that I'm some big celebrity that I can't do it, but I personally take the time to answer every one of the emails, and through speaking through people and things like that, someone from there said that I touched them in something that I said in an email, and they contacted the Dr. Phil show and told them about me, and then they contacted me, and that's how I got there.
Okay, so someone contacted you from the Dr. Phil show as a result of someone else who you inspired, and they pretty much submitted your name to the show, and apparently they saw exactly what that person saw and what the other thousands of people saw and what we all see on Steamy Trails. So you get the call, and how long did it take before you were actually on the show?
They called me 2 days before they flew me out there.
Oh, my God.
They called me on a Sunday. They sent a crew out to my youth center on a Monday, which is that the whole clip that you see. Those are the actual kids in my youth center that's in that clip. And they came out and they filmed for a day, and then that following day they flew me out to California.
Unbelievable. So when you were – because where are you living now?
I'm in Pennsylvania.
Okay, so you're back on the East Coast, and you flew out to the La La Land.
Yeah.
And so did they have a limousine waiting for you?
They did. They treated me and my sister went, and they treated us really, really well. And we met Dr. Phil and his wife, and they were fantastic and very nice. And even after the show, they still keep in contact with us. We actually did a follow-up show, I think it was last year sometime, but they actually still keep in contact with us, and very, very nice people.
Okay. As a result of that show, I'm pretty sure that if you got thousands of emails from the Essence interview, the 35th anniversary, I'm pretty sure as a result of that show, you received a lot more attention.
Yes, and one of the biggest things we received from the show was people knew that we were here now, and the need for what we were offering also got bigger, because people wanted the services that we were offering, and we got tons of kids coming in. And it was kind of overwhelming because we were working on a small budget before and dealing with the kids that we had coming in. And then now because of the show, we had kids coming from all over, and it was just – it was hard at first, but God made a way.
Okay, so your affiliation with the Dr. Phil show, because you know – he is right up there with Oprah. Did you get a chance to meet Oprah, or?
No, we're still trying to get to Oprah. We're still trying to get there. We haven't gotten there yet, but we're still trying to get there.
Yeah, because I know that she would just, oh, my God, she would just adore you.
Mm-hmm.
And so what did you take away from that experience?
From the Dr. Phil experience?
Uh-huh.
I think at the time when we got the call from the Dr. Phil show, I think it's one of the things that I talked about on the show, too, that I was actually considering closing down my program because, like I said, we were working on such a small budget and there were so many kids coming in that needed our help, and we just couldn't do it financially. We just couldn't do it. And I had been praying and saying, you know, Lord, I know you gave this to me, and I know you can make a way, but I just can't see it right now. And it had become a lot. And I had gone on a three-day fast because I wanted to know if I should shut this program down, what should I do with the youth that were in the program. And then that's when the Dr. Phil Show contacted me. And it's not on the clip that you have, but they actually gave me $50,000. And
that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah. Yeah, they actually gave me, the Dr. Phil Foundation gave us $50,000, which allowed us to buy a bigger building to do more with the program. So I think that the thing that I took from that was, no matter how it looks, that this is something that God gave to me and that he's going to take care of it and he's going to make sure it happens.
God,
make sure I have everything I need to help the kids that I'm helping.
You are just such an inspiration. I just, you know, I want to do a full in-depth interview with you, an actual write-up, so
mm-hmm.
that it could be part of my blog archive, because, you know, it just doesn't seem that there are words that can describe the difference that you're making with so many children out there in the world, because, you know, a lot of these kids come into the world innocent. And then, you know, from the cradle to the grave, you know, they're pretty much tampered with. So you are a stop along the way for them, a very important stop that can change their lives forever. And like you said, there was a few of those that went through your stop along the way, and they really have turned out to be productive individuals. And then
right.
you said that there was a mother that is there of one of the children that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that you're not only assisting the children, you're also taking part in cultivating and the rebuild of the parent. You
well,
know?
She's actually the reason that I started my foundation, because mm-hmm. she came to me as a foster child. She was 15 years old with the first son, my oldest son. And she got pregnant with my youngest son when she was living with me. And she was 15 years old at the time, and she was aging out of the system. And I don't know if you know a lot about foster care, but a lot of times when kids age out of the system, because they've been in the system, they don't have families, they don't have a place to go. So here she was, you know, 17 years old with two kids and didn't know what she was going to do once she got out of the system. And she just left the kids with me. And because she did that, you know, it kind of opened my eyes up to how many other young people were in her same situation. So that was why I started my nonprofit organization. It originally started to help youth who were aging out of the system and to kind of give them, you know, a place to go and give them hope. Because statistics show that close to 70% of youth who age out of the system either end up homeless, end up in prison, and, you know, that sort of thing. So that's a big population. And that
70%?
Was why I started my program.
Wow.
I'm sorry? Yeah.
70%. That's a mm-hmm. very high number. Yeah, I'm very
yeah.
close to that. One of my family members was in the foster care system. And
mm-hmm.
and I actually read a book by this author. She's actually a very high-profile lawyer here in the Bay Area now. It's called A Piece of Cake.
Uh-huh.
And she goes by the name of Cupcake Brown.
Okay.
And she was actually dating one of my friend's uncles.
Mm-hmm.
And her story, I mean, it's a huge book, and my friend actually got a chance to get me a copy, and she autographed it for me at the beginning of my literary career. This is even before I wrote a book. And the tales that she told
mm-hmm.
about what she endured within the foster care system. So you have children who are already broken, and then they get put into the foster care system, and you would think that it would be a positive experience, but then there are people that are only in it for the money, and
right.
this girl was actually raped in
mm-hmm.
the foster care
uh-huh.
system.
Yes.
And so, you know, the children that pass on their journey and they encounter your haven, your safe haven, it really is such a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
It just really is. And, you know, aging out of the system and, you know, pretty much right into the arms of even more devastation. So let's move past this a little bit and get into this, because you could we could just go on and on, because the subjects of that, like you said, you know, you have them when they come in, but then
right.
as they get older and then they age out of the system, I mean, it just goes on and on. So you're going to have a lot to write about.
Yes, so, definitely.
Oh, wow. So you are also an ordained minister through the World Council of Independent Churches. Can you tell us a little bit about your role as a minister?
Well, let me say it this way first. I'm the type of person that you don't challenge. You don't say, you know, if you think you can do something better, do it better. And I've heard that a lot in my life, and I've always set out to do it better. And my son has autism, and we would go to church, and he would act out. And it wasn't so much that he was acting out. I believe that that was his way of praising the Lord. He would yell and scream, and you know, but it was at what they called inappropriate times.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't just him, but it was other kids in the church who had disabilities. And I started a support group for parents of children with disabilities, and this is what they said was that in their churches, their kids, not so much that they weren't welcome, but they weren't welcome. And that you know, because of their behaviors, they were disruptive to the services, and they would say, well, can you control your kids? And, you know, do you have someone that can keep your kids at home? And, you know, that sort of thing. And just because a child has a disability, especially one like autism, I didn't think that that was appropriate. So I approached my pastor at the time, and I told him that I didn't think that that was right, and I didn't think that that was godly for him to, you know, to cast those kids aside like that. And he said, well, it's ministry and this sort of thing, and if you, to make a long story short, if you think you can do it better, do it better. So I went out and I got my license and I started a little church, and those were the people that were in the church.
If I'm not mistaken, isn't there a passage in the Bible that says, come as you are?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to throw that in there because
of course
yeah, you know, because it doesn't matter what you wear,
because
there is a church by the Reverend Cecil Williams here up in San Francisco that's been around for years, and he feeds a lot of homeless, and there are a lot of homeless people that actually go into the church, and these are people that are out there, and they may not necessarily smell right because they haven't had a bath or anything. There could be gay and lesbian people that have been shunned from the different churches out there, but it's a safe haven for people of all walks of life, colors, creeds, sexual preferences, everything, to go in to worship, because that's what it's really all about. So for me, once again, yet another feather in Elaine Newkirk's hat, that your heart is just so open, and you realize that, you know, here this door was probably closed. Bam, you kicked it open with another one.
Yes.
Outstanding. So I have a brief bio on my literary blog site about you with links for your books as well as the link to Time. For listeners, can you give them the links to go purchase your book and to read more about what you do?
The best way to purchase the book is to go to Amazon.com and just put in The House with Dirt Walls, and it'll bring up the book and do it that way. I laugh because I'm always talking to some of the Steamy Trails folks and asking them to teach me how to do all that stuff with the book, like how you guys get all that information out there to folks. I don't know how to do all that. Like I said, I didn't write this book to sell it. I wrote this book to help the kids that I'm helping. So, I mean, it's been a blessing that it's been selling the way it has, and all of the money goes to support the youth program. And, you know, so that's been a big help. But as far as promoting the book and things like that, I usually take a stack with me when I go out and speak, and that's how I get the book and everything out there, with the exception of, like I said, Amazon.com. If you go there, you can purchase the book. As far as the website and what we're doing, it is www.itsmytyme.org. It's mytime.org. And the time is spelled like that because it stands for Teach, Youth, Motivate, and Empower.
Acronym, positive and powerful. And you don't have to worry about trying to do all of this stuff that we're doing out here, like linking everything up, because you got people here that want to help you as well, because I didn't know a lot of this stuff. And, again, it's just me, so I have a lot of time on my hands. So you can best believe I have your links on my blog. And
okay.
If you want to go there to read about Elaine or any of the other authors or any of my own writings, you can go to http://... it's author to be, and that's AUTHOR, the number 2, BE, .wordpress, all run together, .com. And you could get the information, more information about this wonderful, fabulous, and inspiring young lady. Okay, so as this hour is winding down, what else would you like the listeners to know about Elaine Newkirk?
Not so much about me, but my youth program is currently working on two projects right now. The first project is an autism camp project, and we're working on raising money. I'm not asking anybody to send in any money or anything like that, but we're working on raising funds to build a camp for the families of kids with autism. There are a few camps in the United States where you can send the child with autism and they'll take them and keep them for a week to give the families a break. But there are very few places, I believe there's only one or two in the United States, where a family of a child with autism can go and the whole family can enjoy a vacation and spend time together and enjoy that child together in a non-stressful environment. So we've been given some land, and we're in the process of raising money to build a camp on that land. And another project that we're working on is called the WORD Project, and WORD stands for Women of Renewed Destiny. And what that is that's young women from the ages of 16 to 21. They're homeless, they're in domestic violence shelters, they're in situations where they can't really do a lot for themselves, and we take them through a 12-month program where each week we are helping them to attain a goal at the end of the year. Like I said earlier, if that goal is to go to college or whatever it is, we take them through step-by-step process in order at the end of the year to make that goal happen. And without people sending in money, of course they can buy the book, because that's where the proceeds from the book is going. Of course they can send in money. We won't turn anything away. But the best way that people can help us is that if they would go to goodsearch.com, and they would download, they put Time Youth Center in there, and it'll come up. It'll say Currensville, Pennsylvania. They'll click on that link, and anytime they search the internet, Good Search will send us a donation. So they don't have to do anything that they aren't doing on a regular basis. You normally go into your web browser and put in Blog Talk Radio or put in Steamy Trails or whatever it is that you're going to. You would continue to do that every day. And as long as you have our youth center there, they will send us a donation.
Oh, wow. You know, I'm going to get together with you on that because, you know, I do write. I mean, I write novels and I do a lot of interview writing, but I do want to do an in-depth interview, a written interview, so that I can include all of this information in there. And, you know, your humbleness is just so wonderful. Like you said, we're not asking for any money, and I feel you on that, because, you know, sometimes, you know, when you put that out there, then people kind of run away. But for the most part, you know, you're very subtle with what you do, and you let people make decisions based off of their heart,
right?
You know, and so we'll get together on that so that I could go ahead and get that on my WordPress blog, the link over to so that they can get to this particular link that you're talking about. And you answered my next question, which was, if someone wanted to make a donation, what would they do? So you did answer that for me.
Yes. And, of course, I do go out and speak and tell people about me, anyone, you know, I mean, you may not be in a position to make a donation, but you may know someone who is, and just tell them about me, and we go out and speak. And even if you know of a young person that could benefit from something that I have to say to them, if you contact me via my website, they'll give you my phone number, and I have a 24-hour phone line, and I'll speak to that young person and help them in any way that I can as well.
Oh, my God. I have teared up so much in this hour. It is unbelievable. And I most certainly will. I guess I'm turning into somewhat of a humanitarian activist my own self, you know, and I'm cultivating young writers and putting them out there in the spotlight and people, you know, I want to be a place where people can also where people can view and get to know other people as well, too. So not to the degree that you are doing it, but I'll tell you right now, my Blog Talk Radio site has had about 3,500 visitors since it began September 2nd, and then my blog site has 10,000-plus visitors. So we need to go ahead and hurry up and get your information on there so that people can go ahead and contribute to this phenomenal cause that is making a difference out here in the world.
Definitely.
Oh, wow. Well, it seems as if another intriguing hour has passed, and I'd like to personally thank you, Elaine, author and humanitarian, for being a guest on A Touch of Grace. And I also want to thank you for being a spark of light for so many in this world that can sometimes be so dark. So thank you, my sister. You are welcome here on my show anytime. You have my phone number. You have my email address. If you need me to do something in the literary form for you, if you need me to do a post for you or post a link, you let me know. And I'd also like to remind the listeners about Tuesday, December 7th show. I will be interviewing another remarkable writer who is also from the alum of Steamy Writers on Facebook. His name is author Michael Charles Givens, and we will be discussing his riveting autobiographical book, The Dopeless Hope Fiend. So, Elaine, I would like to say again, thank you and God's blessings to you and the people that you're out there touching. And I just want to say keep on doing what you're doing because you really are making a difference and you're inspiring so many.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so until then, God's blessings to all and my sincere gratitude for your support of A Touch of Grace, listeners. If you haven't told those you love them lately, do it now because tomorrow may be too late. This is author G.D. Grace saying ciao for now.